Everybody doing today? All right, everybody learning a lot of good stuff today? Excellent, glad to hear that. All right, well, then we're going to jump in. Before I go any further, and even tell you who I am, talk about our partners here. Want to thank Microsoft and DeVry University for being our platinum sponsors. In addition, we have Aprenda and Modus and Hosting.com, DevExpress and Springhouse. We've also got Turnberry Solutions and RTTS and Tech Systems and Relevante, some great companies that that support our community. And I want everyone to keep in mind, and you probably recognize me from the guy who makes the announcements about the vendors, so this is important to me. And it should be important to you, too, because these are the people that make this event possible, right? So let's recognize those partners, and thanks. So, okay, so here we are with introduction to Link. And if you're in the wrong room, now would be a good time to leave. So a little bit about me. My name is Andy Schwamm. And actually, this slide's a lie because I'm not really an independent consultant anymore. As of this week, I have a full-time job. And I'm working for Music Choice. And I'm doing a lot of Silverlight work there and a whole bunch of other cool stuff. And it's fun. I guess technically, I'm still an independent consultant on the side. But listen, if you have any questions, my contact information is here. My email is andy@ingenuitynow.net. I have a blog. I'm also on Twitter at Schwamm is where you can find me. My blog is called Schwamm Says. So Schwamm is kind of the name I'm using there. I've been a .NET developer since the original version. And since then, done a lot of ASP.NET and things like that. Most recently, MVC, and now, for the most part, focused on Silverlight and other cool stuff like that. Been using Link and Link to SQL and other Link-related stuff since it came out, actually since it was in beta. So I've got a fair amount of experience with this technology, and it's really exciting stuff. Link is awesome. Quick show of hands, anyone using Link already? Okay, so for the most part, we're beginners, which is good, because this is an intro type presentation. And you're going to see that when we get into Link, it's really cool, right? I mean, a lot of technology is cool, but Link's one of those things that just makes the stuff you're already doing easier and sort of makes your code easier to read and easier to write and all kinds of stuff. So what is Link? If you're wondering, and someone actually asked me in the hall, what is Link? So Link stands for Language Integrated Query. And really what Link is, this is a nice definition that I found on the internet, but I'm not going to read it, but I'll pull out some of the key points here. So Link is basically allows you to have querying capability in your otherwise regular C#, VB.NET languages, right? And what's cool about it is that it offers the, you can use the same syntax, whether you're querying a database, or whether you're querying a collection of objects, or whether you're querying XML, or whatever it is that you might be querying. So what's great is that when you learn Link, it's a reusable technology, I guess you'd say. You can query data sets. All of that use the same syntax. So it's great. And Link relies on the presence of certain language extensions. And we're going to be spending the beginning of the presentation talking about those actual extensions. And so what can you query with Link? Well, I mentioned a couple things already. You can query objects, and that's really what we're going to be spending most of this time on in this presentation today. I think if in the room before, who was in the session before this? Okay, so Link to Entities, Entity Framework should seem familiar. You can query Entity Framework. You can use Link for SQL, all kinds of other stuff. Like I said, I work with Silverlight, and Silverlight has this visual tree, which is, XAML representation of all your objects that, get displayed on the screen. And now I saw someone has a link to visual tree for Silverlight. You can do all kinds of stuff with Link. Really flexible and cool stuff. Is that a question? Yeah. Sure. Yeah, so the question is Link to SQL just for Microsoft SQL Server? And no, Link to SQL, you can do Link to SQL, sort of Microsoft provides that, but there are Oracle providers and things like that, so you can work against. Yeah, we're using it on So, pretty sure that you can do, you know, Oracle providers and things like that. Okay, so did I, yeah, so so a bit of a background of Link. Link was introduced with the .NET framework, the 3.5, introduced Link and Link to SQL that came along with it. But as I said, Link wouldn't be possible without certain language enhancements, and those language enhancements were actually introduced in the .NET framework 3.0. So they were there and just waiting to be used and waiting for Link to come along a mere 0.5 revision later so we could take advantage of all that cool stuff. So the type of these language enhancements are extension methods and lambdas, anonymous types, and implicitly typed variables. We're going to be talking about all these cool things and when we get into the code. But what's great about these things is these 3.0 language enhancements, when you start using Link, you see Microsoft's implementation of these enhancements. And what you quickly learn is that these are things that you can use in your everyday non-Link related code, right? It's often you'll see people use the var or extension methods are a great example. And if you're wondering, well, what are these things? I'll explain them soon. But the point is that you can use these outside of Link. They're not just for Link. They're part of the .NET framework and available for us to use at any time. So with that, we're going to get into the first language enhancement we're going to talk about. And I'm going to go back and forth between slides and code. The slides just kind of help me keep on track and not forget to tell you guys some stuff. So we're going to talk about object initializers and collection initializers. And basically, they're easy ways to instantiate your objects and set values in an object when you instantiate it. And, you know, often you think, well, you may be thinking, well, we already have constructors to do that. Object initializers don't replace the constructors, but they give you a nice alternative. And there's a, like anything, you know, there's like a time and a place. And we'll talk about, you know, maybe when it's good to use constructors, when it's good to use object initializers. And then a collection initializer is very similar. It's just for lists of data as opposed to single data. So if you're wondering, you know, what these kind of things look like, we'll get right in. And I'll go into some code samples because we're at code camp. Now I've got my screen resolution is pretty small for this presentation for the screen. Hopefully everything is fit right to fit on your screen. And hopefully you guys, I mean that looks pretty good, right? You can read that nicely from the back. Okay, great. So now I just want to. I have a lot of code samples, and this code is already on my blog, right? And the slides are already on my blog. And the address is at the beginning. I'll show it again at the end if you want to download these samples. They're all working samples. I'm probably not going to run through most of them in terms of actually executing the samples because these are syntactic things. And where appropriate, we'll execute them and run them. But in interest of time, I think it's more important to go through and show you guys all the capabilities without stepping through and debugging through all these. But we will step into a few of them. So the first thing we're going to talk about is object initializers. So I always like to start out in showing, you know, the constructor. In other words, this is the way we used to do it, or still do it, but this is not an object initializer. So I have a person class, okay, and I'm going to instantiate it to a new person and pass in first name and last name, because that's my constructor. Matter of fact, I want to show you my constructor, because it's actually kind of important. So if I go to the person, you'll see that this person class has a first name, a last name, and a list of phone numbers, and we'll use that later. I have a default constructor that takes no parameters, okay? And then I have one constructor that takes two parameters, the first name and the last name. That's going to be important. We'll go back to talk about that when we see how this works. So in this first case, you see, I am calling that constructor that takes the first name and the last name, right? And there's nothing new going on. This is the way you may do this every day, okay? In addition, another way you might do it is you might use a default constructor and pass in no parameters, right? And then set first name equals Barney and last name equals Roland. So again, another way you do this today, and it's kind of normal. But now I'm using the object initializer. And you'll notice the squiggly bracket, or curly bracket, instead of parentheses. And that's how you know we're using an object initializer. Anytime you see those, you kind of, you know, you're off and running on object initializers. Now, you'll notice, if you remember, when I showed you the person class, there is no constructor that takes just one parameter of first name. And I'm not tricking you and going, oh, he's using a constructor, you know. No, there is no one parameter constructor. So it's clear that I am using the initializer. Now, the way this works is I have access to all my properties within the curly braces. So I could come in here and say last name equals, bam, bam, who's that, rubble? Two B's, I don't know. So I have access to, I got myself in trouble with that extra. So I have access, and IntelliSense, right? You saw I have IntelliSense to these properties. I can go in here, and it even pops up. So you can see, you know, the IntelliSense there. So I have access to setting any of my properties. I'm just not in a constructor, and there's a question.
Why is it a comma and not a semicolon? It looks like you're creating a block.
Where?
Because you've got braces. But like in C, normally that would be like a block.
Oh, here? Well, this is basically anything that happens inside this block of code. Is getting passed in to initialize it.
Okay, so it's not actually like another block, like...
No, I don't think it's actually considered a block of code. It's just a different syntax.
You understand what I mean?
Yeah, sure, exactly. Right. Like an if, so I would have if curly braces. Just a syntactic thing. Replaces, yeah, okay. It replaces the parentheses in this case. And so you have, I just want to point out, you can set anything that you want to do. Any of your public properties are accessible through there. Okay. Now, I want to point out, that constructors are still important, right? So I have this class I created called data source, and I'm pointing this out for a reason. You know, so this data source, let's imagine it's some sort of thing I'm going to use to connect to a database, you know, imaginary class here. But what's important is that this has a connection and a timeout. The connection is mandatory, right? There's no way I can connect to this fictitious data source without a connection string. So I have a constructor that takes the connection. But, you know, there's no default constructor, right? So I can still use constructors to force certain properties to be set when I instantiate my object, right? So this is sort of my mandatory things can still be in the constructor. If I go over to the sample now, you can see that I can initialize my data source passing it the constructor as we would normally do with a fake connection string in there, or I can call that constructor and I can still tack on that object initializer to the outside because in this case, I have a timeout value that I want to set. So you can kind of play with it all in combination. Does that all make sense?
Sort of. Can you actually give me an example of an exact connection string? You know what I mean? Is it like what we used to do?
Well, that's a little outside of the scope of this presentation. We're not actually connecting to something. This is just a word connection string. But yeah, this could be the path to the database. This isn't about connecting to databases. Right. Let me just be clear. We're talking about link, okay? And in this case, I'm just showing how you connect to something, but this is not a data source type of thing. This is just a sample of how you would call a constructor. It may be a little confusing, but...
I don't understand why you're passing a string that says connection string. That's an
Well, it could be anything. It's just a string. It's a placeholder. It's just a placeholder.
Okay, so it's a DSM.
It's whatever. Okay. It's any string that you want it to be.
Okay.
Okay. So next, we'll talk about connection initializers. Yes. Yes. And the question is, do we have IntelliSense? And yeah, we have IntelliSense through all this stuff. It's really nice. For collection initializers, it's basically the same concept, but we're working with lists. So the old way we might do this is if we had a list of strings called phone numbers, we create the list, and then we may set, calling the add, we may pass a phone number into this. This is the old way. And scrolling down, you see this is the way we do it with the collection initializer. We just use those same curly braces, and I can pass in comma-separated values that are the strings. And in this case, I'm not even passing in a phone number. It just doesn't care. It's just a string. So you can see this is a nice syntactic way to create lists of data. And, of course, you can do complex things, and you can combine more complex objects. So I use strings, but, yes, you could do this with a person object as well. In this case, I'm using a collection initializer here. Right? Bring it up a little. I'm using my connectional initializer and putting in two people, but in each one of the person, I'm actually initializing them using the object initializer. So you can mix and match as you will all through these. Okay? So that's a little bit of collection and object initializers. Now, these may not seem all that important to you right now, but as we go through these samples, you'll see how all these different pieces of the puzzle come together and make links really really powerful. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is the keyword var. Var is an implicitly typed variable. Okay. Now, if you've been reading about C# 4.0, which introduces the dynamic keyword, if anyone knows about that, put that out of your mind, because that's not to be confused with the var. Right? It could be confusing if you're not understanding. The dynamic keyword is actually quite a bit different than the var. So what is a var? A var is the way to define a variable that picks up, as it's called, implicitly typed. So it figures out what this variable s is going to be. I say var s. And by assigning it a string value, like I'm doing right here, s is now a string. Okay? And in this case, I said var I, and I pass it 100. I is now an int. And I can use the same thing for double, etc. Now, the important thing is it's implicitly typed. But once it's typed, it's locked in, right? So you can't change it. And I'll show you some samples of this kind of stuff.
I equals S.
You cannot say I equals S after that. So here's some examples. And it is exactly. It is compile time, and that's a key difference. As a matter of fact, it's at developer time, too. Visual Studio figures it out as you go. And so you get IntelliSense just like that. And so I'll show you. Okay, here's the original value. I might do it. Say first name equals Ben, that's a string, and I can say int age equals 2. Implicitly typed variables, very similar to the samples I showed you, but look at the one where I say, let's see, here it says count equals 100, okay? If I uncomment this at the bottom and I try to assign a string into count, I'm using ReSharper, so ReSharper's giving me squiggly lines already and saying, whoa, 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 this doesn't work, okay? That's not going to compile, because count is an int. Matter of fact, if I hover over it, well, in this case, it's giving me, if I hover over count up here, you see even the, it knows it's an integer, right? So it's not, it was a good point that this is at compile time, this is not a runtime thing. There's a question in the back. Well, that's kind of the whole purpose of var. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, but when you compile, it figures it out. It would be an object. I guess, yeah. I mean, if it was something that truly isn't known, it would be an object. Well, yeah, but think about it as this. It's in that case, you would also, could you just use object, O equals something, right? And, you know, you could kind of interchange them. Question here?
What if you had the long object?
Yeah, sure.
If
you had a long and you tried to put in a, the same thing would happen. It wouldn't compile because it would know count is an integer. It's not a long.
So you have to explicitly declare long.
Well, no, you would make var l it has to be a long from the beginning. You know, you have a question in the back?
No, I just said that once it is say var count equals one, they expect it's long because it features.
Yeah, it's permanent now at this point. Okay, so now some of you at this point are probably wondering, well, then what's the point, right? If address is a string, why don't we just call it a string? And I would argue, call it a string. Don't call it a var. If you know what something is, you should call it what it is. Now there's a big debate in various communities and various places you work. You're going to find people that want to use var for everything. Matter of fact, ReSharper, the tool I use, will automatically try to say to me, if I made this string address, it's going to say to me, hey, don't you want to make this a var? And I turn that little thing off because I find it annoying. But it really goes to show the difference in opinions and how some people think we should use a var for everything. Now, I will show you soon real use cases of why we need a var. But my philosophy is use a string if you know it's a string, because I think it's just easier to read string first name equals then. Why would I want to complicate that with a var? So when we get into the real examples of where we need a var, you'll see where that's kind of obvious. Right now, it seems a little silly. You have a question here?
Is there a runtime difference between the string on the top?
Sorry?
There's a runtime.
Oh, no, I don't think there's any runtime difference. Oh, yeah, okay. So the question is, thank you, Mark. The question is there a difference at runtime for performance? And no, because this is compile time, right? This is all happening up front. So it's there's no difference. Okay, so if I go back to my slides here, we're going to talk about the next thing, which is, and we're going to come back to, this is all going to come together, and you're going to see why we need vars and all this kind of stuff. So we're going to talk about the anonymous type. Okay? Now, the anonymous type is a class not unlike another class, except that you haven't defined it in code anywhere. Remember, like I had that person that I showed you before is a class. Right, it's here in my code, okay, and it actually exists on file, if you will. Right, well, when you go to an anonymous type, it doesn't actually exist anywhere. You declare it on the fly. And this is the syntax you use. You say new. New what?
I don't know.
It's anonymous. And new anything, right? And I use my object initializer, right? Because there is no constructor and it doesn't have any properties yet because it doesn't exist. So I say new what? And I can actually put whatever values I want to do in here. And I can say, in this case, I'm going to name a property. I'm actually declaring my properties on the fly. So when this new thing exists now, it's going to have a property called first name, which is set to Andy, and a property called last name, which is set to Schwan. And here's where var comes in handy. Well, if I wanted to just sort of, you know, save this in my code to use later, I want to initialize this object, well, how would I save it? I'd want to, you know, I don't have anything to put it in, but I could store it in a var. I could say var person equals new whatever. Okay, and I'll show it in code. I think it'll make a lot of sense.
Okay, I've got a quick question. I'm probably getting ahead of you.
Okay.
But the usefulness I can see with that is if you were going to build a string like that on the fly and then execute it, can you do that in this?
String like that. Okay. The question
I'm
he's asking.
Something out of a database, but I don't know yet. You know, I'm doing different things at different times, and it's all context dependent. And I need to build code to execute stuff that I'm pulling out.
I'm not sure that that's actually, you know, the use. I'll show you the use case, and let's see. Okay. And I can answer your questions after I show you some use cases of it. So here's my anonymous type. And again, I like to show sort of the before and the after. So the old way we would do this is I had that person class. You guys have seen that, right? Person class. And then I showed you how to do it using object initializers. Now I'm going to scroll down, and I'm going to scroll. Sorry, I should say scroll up so you guys can see in the back. Okay. I'm going to create this thing called a presenter. The presenter has different properties, right? This is not a person. Okay. The presenter has a topic. Remember, person. There's no tricks. Right? I'm not calling something that you guys don't realize. There is no topic property of this person. So I'm saying var presenter var, meaning this is going to be whatever I want it to be. And I'm storing it in this variable called presenter equals new. And that new thing is going to have a first name, an age, and a topic. And I can put whatever I want to put inside of here. And once I declare this object, this anonymous type, it's locked in, right? So I've given this thing a first name, an age, and a topic. I can't later come along and change it. It's going to have those three properties, and I have to set it up from the beginning. So if I was to write this out, you know, to the console, I have this thing here, so I'm using this presenter variable there. I have full IntelliSense on this, right? Because now my var named presenter actually is this object, this thing. And it has an age, and it has a first name, and it has a topic. Okay, and I can, you know, I have IntelliSense on there. So as a matter of fact, what's really cool is if you hover over this thing, I zoom in on this, you see this? It shows, when I'm hovering over, you know, presenter, what is presenter, right? It's not a string, it's not a person, it's just tick A. Tick A is some kind of syntax that gets used, you know, under the cover. And what it is, it's a new thing that has a string called first name, an int, age, and a string topic, okay? This object, this class, was never defined anywhere except right here, okay? And so that is what an anonymous type is. And there's a question in the back.
What if I want to pass it as a variable?
Well, I think the var kind of doesn't really work that way. You can't. It kind of goes out of scope, right? It's kind of tied into the area I'm at here. So it's kind of used locally, and it works. It works really great for local, but then you kind of get into trouble when you want to try to do other things with it. Well, it creates an object. It's not an object like you think. It's not a class. It's defined. So another. Well, it's here, but it only lives sort of within the scope of the, let's say, in this method. It has its scope to where it's defined.
What if you have another method that takes an object as a parameter?
Well, an object as a parameter, you can't really do that because it's not an object. It's this other thing, tick A. It's not an object. Remember when I zoomed in on it and you saw the definition of it,
right.
It's not an object. It's tick A, whatever tick A is, right? It's not an object. So you gotta want to be careful, you know, just to think about. Yeah, there's a comment in the back.
One of the things, I mean, you might be able to pass it, but I don't think you can, but you could.
I'm pretty sure you. Yeah.
Because you can't reflect off it, so you wouldn't be able to tell what was inside.
And that's, I'm pretty sure, why you can't
That's why I'm pretty sure that I don't even think you can try to pass it, because the compiler knows that it won't.
So is it like a local class?
You could call it a local class. It's not really a class. It's an anonymous type. Okay. It acts like a class within right here. Okay. But it doesn't have methods. Okay. It's just, yeah, more like a structure, you could almost say. All right? So that's what an anonymous type is. And it's great that we have a lot of questions, but I am, just so you guys understand, we're timed here. And I do want to address all these questions. I'm going to try to do as many as I can. But at certain points, we're going to cut it off. You can always find me in the hall, and you can always send me an email. And I'll try to do as much as I can. But I already know, you know, because we're spending a lot of time on some of these things, that we're going to get into trouble. So the next thing we're going to talk about is extension methods. Extension methods are also, and again, this is part of these language enhancements that were introduced in 3.0 framework, right? And an extension method is used to extend the functionality of another class. So you might be thinking, well, why wouldn't I just write the method, you know, if I'm writing a class, why wouldn't I just put the method in the class in the first place? And the answer is, well, in most cases, you probably would, although there's actually use cases for extension methods, you know, that sort of break that pattern. But what if it's a class that you didn't write, right? What if it's a class that's in the DLL that you're importing or something like that? Well, sometimes you have other options. You can inherit from that class and you know, sort of extend the functionality of that class in some ways. But what if that class is sealed? Right? What if it's a class that you can't inherit from? Say like string or date time, those are sealed and you can't add to them. Okay. Now those aren't the only times you'd use extension methods. There's really a lot of great use cases for extension methods. But they give you the ability to write a new method on a class that you didn't write, okay? And you can do some really cool stuff. I'll show you a sample that I wrote. So there's a couple rules for using them. You have to be declared in a static class. The method itself, this extension method that we're going to write, actually is a static method, okay? And you always, if you want to use it, you have to reference the namespace where my method was defined. So there's a couple pretty simple rules for using extension methods. And I think you're going to find once you start using, if you're using the 3.5 framework, that these are just really cool, helpful things. And so I'll show you an example called time ago. And this was actually the first extension method I wrote. It was like my first day on a new job. And they're like, hey, do you know anything about extension methods? I'm like, yeah, you know, I've been reading up on them. I'm all cool. They said, all right, well, we want you to write an extension method on a date time. And what we want to do is we want to display it. We want to turn it into something different. We want to render a string that says what the date time is, and in relation to today. So if I give it a date that was like a week ago, I want to say on the date, I want to say dot time ago. I want it to give me a text last week, right? Or I want it to say 5 minutes ago, right, in a string. So I'll show you how it works. First off, I will show you my actual time ago extension method. Now you see it's in a static class called extension methods, and you can call it really whatever you want to do. And I have this static method here, all right? And you'll notice the method signature is a little different than you might be used to, okay? The simple part, well, I said it's static, and it returns a string, and that should make sense to everybody. It's called time ago. But this is unusual, right? What are there three values here? Well, when I use this thing, I'll switch over and kind of show you the use case, and this is how it comes together. So I have a date, and I'm going to say date time equals now, right? You know, date time now, and I want to say how long ago now was, right? So I'm going to call time ago. I'm calling my extension method here, right? And when I call it, you can see it's an extension method. And so the now, right, this variable here, or this static variable now, well, I want to use it to do my calculation. But I'm not passing it in as a parameter here, right? I'm just calling an extension method on it. So when you look at the signature of the method, we've got this keyword this. This pretty much says, hey, take that date that I'm working on, that I'm extending, and stick it in here as a parameter. Okay, take my instance and make my instance the parameter. Okay, and now my instance is parameter type date time, and it's called date. So anywhere in here, when I refer to date, okay, the date that I'm talking about is actually the date time that I want to, you know, call the method on. And so basically all I'm doing in this method, right, to simplify it, is I'm calculating, where am I doing this here? I basically take now, right, and I subtract the date that's passed into it, right? And if the total minutes is less than one, I want to return this string just now, right? Date time doesn't do that, but we wanted to do that because it's a nice display property. So I'm going to return the string just now or a minute ago or whatever. You can make this as complex as you want. And to use it, it's as simple as can be. I pretty much go to my date time and I call my extension method and I get full IntelliSense here. Okay, now, and when I looked in there, these are my normal methods and on a date time. If I go down to the T's, where is it? Where am I going here? There, time ago. Notice in here, it has a little down arrow, right? I don't know if you can see that from the back, but there's a little symbol. That means it's an extension method. That means it's not really a method on the class, but it's an extension method. And so I have IntelliSense here. And time ago. And if I was to run this, I'll run the sample. Something is not compiling. What did I break already? Oh, I took. Remember, I put this in before.
Yeah.
Right. So I just kind of screwed that up. So let's run this. Now this is a little console app, and I can pass in. Run this thing. Like I said, I'm not going to run every sample, but we'll run this one. And extension method sample is 7. We'll jump in here. So I have my date. I'm going to jump into time ago. And it says the little math on here. And it returns just now. And it'll go down to the console. And if I run through this whole thing, you know, I'm just putting different dates in here to show. But it's just kind of redundant to show every one of these things. But if I let it all run through, you'll see the different string values. So this is a very helpful tool that you can use to do things like this. We often do date time is a great use case for extension methods because the class is sealed itself. And link, when we get into link, you're going to see just how much extension methods you use. Question? Thank you. So just to be perfectly clear here, my extension methods are in this namespace called language enhancements.extension methods. And if I come over here, you'll see them at the top. Okay, now if I was to comment this out, the whole thing breaks, right? You can even see resharpers kind of showing us already. These don't exist, right? So you have to use the namespace. And so that's, thank you for pointing that out, that the namespace is important there. And let's just get that. So that sort of wraps up the language enhancements portion of the thing, and we're going to move actually into links. So any, you know, real quick, any other questions about the enhancements? So the question is there a way to define a class so someone can't add an extension method? And I'm fairly certain the answer is no to that, that you can't do that. What's the question?
Sealed.
No, if it's sealed, date time is sealed, but I just put an extension method on it. So you can't. There's no way to do that. And that's sort of the whole purpose. It's sort of like a workaround. And if you think about it, we work so hard to define our classes and our objects so that other developers can't do certain things by sealing it. And then, hey, here you go. We open up the back door, and you can go have at it and have some fun. Partial classes can still be extended. The question, you know, the comment, I'm repeating, for the audience on the internet. About partial classes, you can write extension methods on partial classes as well. A partial class is a different way of sometimes doing something that you might want to do in an extension method. If you had a partial class, then I may say to you, well, why would you use an extension method? Why wouldn't you just write a partial to go along with it and write your method in there? Different ways to accomplish different things, and there's time and place for all of them. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
You cannot write a partial class.
But you can't write a partial class for daytime. Is exactly right, because it's sealed.
Internally, let's say within a class, if you want the same class to be used by or class to be open for other people.
That's right. In your everyday work, you would probably want to maybe use a partial class if you felt it needed to be extended later. But these are different tools that you have for different situations. And I do want to move on, if you guys don't mind. So let's talk about link, right? Because now we're actually getting into what you guys signed up for. What is link? Well, link, the first thing we're going to talk about with link is called query operators. What are query operators? Well, query operators are a bunch of extension methods that Microsoft wrote and provides to us. Okay? And they do query type functionality. So I have a couple of examples of here, like select, or where, or order by. If you were to do querying data, those things seem like stuff that would come in handy, right? You want to select data and maybe do some filtering on it and order by. There's a lot of them. We'll get into a whole bunch of different samples, but these are extension methods that .NET provides in link, and it's actually got to be in the system.link namespace. I realize that's not one of my slides. If you want to use link, it's in system.link namespace. Okay? So what are these extension methods of, right? Before I showed you how to write an extension method on a date time, right? When you write an extension method, you say this extension method can only be used on the following type of class. These are extension methods on, actually in this case, an interface, not a class, the IEnumerable of type T, which is a collection. Okay? List implements IEnumerable of type T. So if I'm in an IEnumerable, I can use link. Okay? And there's other things that implement IEnumerable, such as, I already said list, an array. You can do link on an array because an array is an IEnumerable. A dictionary of key value pairs, that's an IEnumerable. So you can do link there. Turns out you can actually do link on a string. Does anyone know why?
It's got a bunch of characters in it.
It's got a bunch of characters in it, and I'll give you that. It is a collection of characters, so you win a book.
ASP.NET 4.
So the answer was, why can you do link on a string? Because it's just a collection of characters, right? So it's one of those funny things. You may not use it too often, but it's there for you. So we're going to talk about lambda expressions. And before I do, I want to stay on this slide for a second. You know, we talked about, look, this is a good example, where what? I want to probably put in some kind of filtering expression on this, right? This is where lambda expressions come in handy. The thing that goes in here is going to be a lambda expression, and we'll kind of move on. But that's why it's kind of a good segue into the next slide. So a lambda expression, when you see this equals greater than operator, that's how you know you're working with a lambda. Anytime you see that, you know, hey, okay, here comes a lambda. And so here's how it works syntactically. Here's what it looks like. Imagine I have a list of customers called customer list, okay? And I want to say where, well, where what? And now you get this new lambda syntax, which is a little unusual. Some people find it a little, confusing at first, but I think the more you, it's almost one of these things you want to just give in to the lambda. Don't think about it too much, like be the lambda, just kind of, you know, let it just flow. And the less you think, I honestly sometimes think the less you think about it, the more it makes sense. So I declare this variable C, right? And you'll always see the syntax. A variable and then the lambda operator. C, in this case, will be my customer, right? Imagine, if you will, we're iterating through the list, although you don't do it, link does it for you. Well, C is going to be the customer. And so I'm going to say where C.name, right? It's really as simple as that. And so what you start to do is you start to read this and you kind of forget about this. I shouldn't point too much because we're on live meeting. You forget, you start to forget about the C and the lambda operator, and you just kind of read it as customer list where C.name equals Smith. Now, that can be more complex than that. This is a sort of a simple example. Question here.
Real quick question. I'm a SQL guy, so we would normally, in SQL, you would leave the C expression part out and just say C.name equals Smith. Can you use a syntax like that?
Or no.
Do you have to
no, it's a lambda expression, and it has to be a lambda.
It has to be like
right.
That.
But we'll show you, we'll get into some other syntax.
It just does, right?
Yeah, it just does, right, exactly.
Okay.
So, now, behind the scenes, or under the covers, what's going on with lambda expressions? Well, actually an awful lot, okay? But like I said, just give into it. Don't worry about the fact, because this is an introductory topic here, right? We're not going to get into the real nuts and bolts of what lambdas are here. But really, there's a whole lot of stuff going on in the back, with anonymous methods and delegates and all kinds of stuff that goes on. But you don't really need to know how that works. I mean, there's lots of things in the .NET framework that the compiler does that you don't really know about, and just so don't, you know, when you read about lambdas, if you go home and you're doing some more homework, there's going to be a whole lot more about delegates and things like that. It's really not important to use them, right? You can use them without sort of fully understanding what goes on underneath the cover. And in a more advanced topic, it's good to know, but it's not really critical. So let's take a look at some of these query operators that we've been talking about. And now we're actually looking at length samples. So let's just close these. Samples here. I'm going to go into my query operators samples, I'll set this as my startup project so I don't forget to do that later. And let's take a look at some of these samples. Okay. Now, I always like to do the before and the after, right? So how would we do this without link? What if I had a list of names? I just have a couple strings in here. These are some of the presenters. I actually did this talk a few weeks ago at a Firestarter, and these were the list of presenters at the Firestarter event. So I had a list of strings, and if I wanted to find the one that had the name Andy, how would I do that? So I have my list, and I set up a result object to keep track of the one that's the winner, and I would do a for each loop maybe, right? There's other ways you could do this. This is one example. Do a for each loop and look through the list of names and then say if name equals Andy, then maybe store it in results so I could use it later, right? And then maybe console write down the result. This is a way we might have done this, you know, before link. And this is why I like link. Because let's get rid of this here. Here's the syntax now. The code that I've highlighted here. Okay? I go to names, it's a collection, it's an IEnumerable, right? In this case it's a list, which implements IEnumerable. I call the link expression extension method single, which returns one thing. Okay? And I give it that lambda syntax and I say where n equals Andy. And I've chosen to use the letter n here. But again, this is just a variable I declared right here. I could change this to be the, you know, it could be anything I want. I could use name, but I think I'd have a conflict with this variable here being called name. But again, this is a decision I made. N isn't really relevant. Is it a question?
First or last parents.
Is it the first or last?
Parents. So who is the parent in the list?
Oh, in this case, okay, well, that's an interesting question. The question is that the first or last occurrence? Well, a single actually will blow up if there's more than one occurrence, okay? Which is something I was actually going to say, you know, it's in the next sample, but in this case, it checks the whole list, and single is not meant to return a list of things. It's meant to return one thing only, okay? And so what we've done now is we've used our first link code. And I want to show you, someone asked in the presentation a couple weeks ago, is there a list of these extension methods that I can get to? And I would say, well, the easiest way to do it is to look through the IntelliSense, and anywhere you see that little down arrow, you know these are extension methods, and these are my link extension methods. So there's a whole bunch of things in here. Anywhere you see, here's first. Remember, if we were working with a list, first would give me the first one, okay? And there's a whole bunch of things we can do in here, and we'll show some samples. Of other things. So single is going to return that one item. But look at the difference in code. Okay, this code, well, it's not terrible, right? It's not that much code. But look at this code. Okay, once you get used to that lambda syntax, that's pretty darn readable. Okay, that's a nice code. What I like about link is it makes your code, you know, sort of simpler and easier to read. And, you know, and so if I think if code is easier to read, it's usually easier to maintain as well.
In terms of performance,
it's pretty performant. I mean, you're working with objects right here in memory. In this case, we're not talking about link to SQL or link to entity frameworks. That's a whole big different discussion when it comes to performance. But this is very fast. This is very fast. The next one we're going to do is single or default. Okay? Because much like the gentleman who asked what would happen if there was more than one, what happens if there's none? What happens if it doesn't exist? Well, if it doesn't exist, single is actually going to throw an exception. Okay? Single isn't really friendly. It's actually, you know, it's got a lot of rules to use. So we can use this extension method called single or default. Right? And again, you know, how do I get to that? I'm on my names list, and I just come in here, and I get, you know, I have IntelliSense, and I can see single, I can see single or default. So you can, you know, sort of use IntelliSense to help you learn this stuff. In this case, I can call single or default, and that's going to work for Andy because Andy exists. And in this case, Ben isn't in the list, but it won't throw an exception, okay? Name, too, in this case, will actually just be null, okay? But it doesn't throw an exception. On the other hand, this line of code right here would actually throw an exception, okay? And I want to be clear, I'm not going to run the sample, but I'm not talking about, like, this is null, it's going to blow up later. Like, really, runtime, boom, doesn't work, okay? So that's single or default. Let's talk about lists of data, because so far I've only been using it to get one single item. Well, what if I want to get a collection of names? So what if I wanted to get, in this case, all the names that start with the letter D? Well, the old way I would do it is that similar kind of thing. I might make a list collection here, right? And I would then loop through them all and query that, you know, if name starts with D, then add it to my collection, and then I could later on loop through my collection of names here. This is the way we do things every day. It works. It performs well, you know, but Link would perform better in some of these cases because you often end up the old way with these nested loops and all, and I'll show an example of one later. So here's my new where clause. Names where, sorry, I'm trying to keep everything on the screen here. Name where, in this case, where N starts with the letter D. That's pretty simple, right? I mean, do you get the sort of the power of the syntax and how nice and terse it is? Is terse the right word for that, right? It's just short and simple. Oh, well, there's a whole bunch of differences between, actually, between where and find all. I got to tell you, I don't know the answer. Is that anyone that's using Link? The difference between where and find, is there a find all? Dot find all. Well, let's see if it gives us any. Trees all elephants that match the conditions to find a specific predicate. In this case, there might not be a difference. I'm not sure. It's a good question. It's kind of funny. I you get used to certain ones that you use all the time, and there's a lot of them out there. So an even cleaner way to write this, by the way, is, you know, I was saving my list in this IEnumerable here, and then later on I'm looping through it here. I can also just do it in line. I don't know if you notice the difference here. In this case, I say, and I'm just going to call my for each right against names and put my inline link statement right in there. So there's a lot of ways you can use this to sort of like clean up your code. So order by is another thing you might want to use. If you're going to get a list of names, you might want to order them alphabetically or something like that. So I have that list of names, and I'm going to say names order by. Now, this is a little unusual syntax. And I have to be honest, I'm not exactly sure. There's some things that we use every day, but to put them into words, it's a little tricky. So what is this? Order by N, where N? It kind of doesn't make sense. But what this is really telling me is N is my name, and I want to order by it. Okay. Now, I'll show other examples where if I had a complex object here, like a person, I could say, well, where P dot first name or something. But in this case, it's just a string. It doesn't have those properties. So I can just do order by.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I had two questions at once, sir. Oh, yeah, that's an example, right. I could do order by, lowercase ordering, I guess, would be. Oh, yeah, I don't know, maybe that would work. It's an interesting idea. Now, there's also order by descending, okay, to reverse it. And another thing, I don't know if I have an example, but if you want to do multiple order bys, it's really cool. You say order by N, and then you say, now this is a then by. See the then by? Now, in a string, you probably wouldn't use then by, but in a more, you might want to do first name, then by last name. Okay? So then by is really cool, and you have then by descending. So you can kind of mix and match all kinds of cool stuff with order by. Now, I'm not running these samples. Is that fair to everybody? I mean, there's really no reason to run this, right? You get the idea what it's going to be like. So here's some more complex objects, and I want to show, because we've been working with strings. So just to set the stage here, I'm sorry. Is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is it working like a yield statement? When I use select in a, behind the scenes, I believe I'm not that versed in yield and all that kind of stuff. So I'm probably not. I can't really answer that question really well. Sorry.
One other.
Yeah. Sir.
Okay, if you have name.orderBy and then the parentheses, why do you need that lambda expression in there at all? I mean, couldn't you just say name.orderBy and it should order by name?
But you do. The question is, why do you need that that lambda syntax? Because the method takes a lambda.
Oh, okay.
So sorry. Yeah. Okay, so I do want to keep this thing moving. So in this case, let's say we're going to work with some more complex objects. So I wrote this little data service. Now, I want to be really clear about this data service, okay? This is not a link. I'm not going to a database here. I'm just using this to help my code, to make my code a little more concise. So I've got this list of data that has some artists, musicians that have band names. Paul McCartney, and they're listed as being in the band The Beatles, right? This is just data, right? But this is in-memory objects, right? Don't confuse this with link to SQL or link to entities. These are just classes that I made up. So I have this two things. I have one method that returns a list of artists. I have another method that returns a list of bands. And we'll be using these in some of the samples as we move forward. So here we go. So if I have this data service that returns a list of artists, now I'm saving them in my artist variable. And now I can select from artists, I can say single or default, where, remember before I was just using like, it was a string, and I mentioned that, you know, we have object, we can use all the properties of the object. So in this case, A is my artist. I have IntelliSense, and I can look at any of the properties, and in this case, I'm saying where a band name equals Beatles, right? So the only difference here is I'm using a real sort of real object, a business type object, as opposed to a string, okay? And I can do the same kind of stuff and query it. So I do want to point out that there's that you can work, you know, it's not just for strings, like some of my previous samples, and we're going to do more. But I do want to talk about this concept of chaining these query operators together, right? I mentioned earlier that these query operators are extension methods on IEnumerable, right? Now, aside from the things that return one, like single, which returns just one thing, something like where actually returns another IEnumerable, right? Its return type is IEnumerable. What does that mean? That means I can take what it returned, and I can do link on it too, right? So, so you start to see syntax like this on the screen here, where I say, you know, people where, and I do a where clause. What does that return? That's going to return an IEnumerable. So I can say dot on the IEnumerable, and then do an order by. So this is this concept of how you can really easily sort of build these statements up, because just where may not be all that helpful, but I might want to do other things. Okay? So we can chain them together. And I guess I have a sample of that, but it's really pretty much what I had on the slide, I guess, in this case. So, you know, I'm just saying order where the band name is the Beatles and order by the last name. So it's really no big deal there. But that kind of becomes, you know, these are all these like building blocks that come together to make link, you know, pretty exciting. And I think I wanted to go back to another. Did I skip one? Okay. So in this case, I want to select an object. And, you know, well, we talked so much about vars and anonymous objects. And, well, now how does this really come into play with link? Okay. So now we're kind of combining the pieces of the puzzle. So in this sample here, I'm calling my getArtist method, and it returns the artist. The artist has a first name and a last name and a band name. Okay? And I'm going to select from it. Okay? This imagine this dot is right at the end of the line there. This dot would be really here. But you often see that syntax where you wrap it down and it makes it really nice and easy to read on the screen. So I'm going to select it. But what's going on here? This looks different. What am I doing here? What's this new keyword? Well, I don't want an artist. Okay. In my business case, whatever this business case is, I want to return an object that has a name property, and I don't know why, I call it role count, but I didn't show you the data sample there. Paul McCartney is listed as a singer and a bass player, you know, so he has two roles in the band, right, for example. So I want to know how many roles does the person have. Okay. Now, the artist, I already showed you, has a first name and a last name property. So I'm going to make an anonymous object, right? Someone actually in the last session said, well, this is almost like using a view if you were in a database. We're not in a database, but you query two tables and you wanted to sort of make a view together. You know, it was a decent analogy, and I thought that was interesting. So here's that great example. Here's my new keyword, and I'm an anonymous class. I'm going to return from this thing an object that has a name and a role count, right? And just like before, I'm going to store it in a var of list called list. Why is it a var? Because it doesn't exist anywhere. I can't say there's no way I could save this thing as a variable because it doesn't have a class name. But just like earlier, if I look at let's say this list and I hover over that var, you can see. Oh, whoa, that was the wrong button. I always do that when I want to zoom in. If I hover over my var and I zoom in on it. You can see, what is this object? It is a tick A that has a name and a role count, right? And now I have this new object that I can use, and I can do other stuff with it. And I have IntelliSense on that object, so if I was to, you know, use it, I can go to the name and the role count property. So this gives you, now this is pretty powerful stuff, right? This gives you the ability to, in your in your methods, you know, sort of combine things and then, you know, pass, you know, and just sort of use it in different ways and combine things. I'm not going to talk about deferred execution because I know that that's going to make me run long. So that's sort of it for this sort of next section, and then we're going to move on to another section. So we're going to move on to something called query expressions, right? We were talking about query operators before. Now, I mentioned there's a lot of query operators. I showed a few of them. In the interest of time, you know, there's really no way to show every query operator, but I hope you guys got the idea that there's things like single and where and order by. You know, there's a lot of different things you can do. But now we have this thing called query expressions. What's query expression? Query expression is really just another syntax. You've heard the phrase syntactic sugar? Query expressions is syntactic sugar. What that means is it's going to do the same thing as a query operator. This is it's just a different way of typing the code. And some people like one more than the other. Okay. Now, so people like it because it looks like SQL. And sort of. It's not completely like SQL, but it's similar. What's interesting is what happens when you run a query expression is actually at compile time, I should say, not at runtime, but at compile time, it's actually turned into query operators. Okay? So there's no performance difference. Everyone says, well, which one's faster? They're exactly the same. Okay? Now, there are some things that you can do. So let's be clear about this. Query operators are really the true link. Okay? Query expressions are the syntactic sugar. So you can do more in the operators than you can do in the expressions. Okay? You can do a lot of things, both of them, but there's some things that you just can't do in one versus the other. Okay? And I'll be honest, I'm waiting for someone to ask me, well, what? And I know I have a sample, and it just blanked out of my head. I can't think of one, but there are things. I've run into it. So let's analyze this a little bit. This is a SQL statement, right? I don't want to confuse this. This is a SQL statement where if I had a customer table, I might select, you know, C.star. So I've given customers the alias of C. I select everything, C.star, from my table, and I say where the customer ID is not zero, and I order by C.name, right? And we can turn this into a query expression, and it's just sort of flipped a little bit. The difference is that the select is at the bottom, right? So I say from C and customers, C is like my, you know, if you really want to stick to SQL, you can say that's your alias, okay? And I say where C.id is not equal zero, order by C.name. Select C at the bottom. Now, a lot of people always say, well, why is the select C at the bottom? Why couldn't they just put it at the top? There's actually a very good reason for that. It's not just that they screwed up when they were writing the language, right? The problem is, if you didn't declare C first as what C is a customer, you wouldn't have IntelliSense, so it just wouldn't work, right? So that's the answer to why this is. Now, I want to be really clear about this. This may look like SQL, but this is not SQL. Okay? This is link. I'm still going to use this against objects in memory. Okay, people are probably familiar and heard of link to SQL. This is not link to SQL. This is still just link. Okay, the to part of the link to object, link to SQL, link to the framework. The to part says what's your data source, so to speak. But this is link. In this case, it's just the link to objects. Yeah, it could be linked to SQL if customers sort of was a collection of link entities or something. But in this case, it's not. Okay, so I want to be clear about that. So, in sticking with this, I'm gonna. What's going on here? There we go. I'll show some samples, and we'll do some other things in link, and we'll do some of these things in the query expression. So then you're probably wondering, you know, why would you use one versus the other? You know, honestly, a lot of it comes down to personal preference. I find some things look better one way than the other, and I'll try to show some examples of where I do one thing versus the other. So what's in this sample here? This shows sort of the basic syntax. Oh, okay. So in the beginning, I have my operator sample. This is sort of what we would have done, you know, 5 minutes ago, right? This is the extension methods, right? Anytime you see that dot notation, we're doing extension methods. Underneath it is the exact same query. This time, I'm just using a different syntax. Now, how many people here are SQL, have used SQL or databases? Right? Pretty much everybody. So, I often think that, you know, from a learning curve perspective, a lot of people feel that this is an easier jumping in point, you know, because this kind of looks, like, doesn't this look a little more friendly to everybody? You know, I kind of thought it did in the beginning. Now, again, I said they end up being the same thing, so it goes to personal preference. And you can do things either way. But, you know, I can explain the sample. You know, I'm going to call my artists, my data service. I'm getting a list of objects. Again, I'm not calling a database. Don't get confused with the fact that I call it a data service. And I say, you know, where artist. First name is Paul, right, et cetera. It's just a different syntax for what we would have done before. No big deal. But, yeah, sir, question. I'm sorry. The result here?
Yeah.
Result. Okay, sure. Yeah, so what is result? In this case, my result isn't... Okay, that's a great question. So the question is, why do we need to do a to list here? What happens is a link query, there's a thing called deferred execution, which is something I skipped because I said we didn't really have time. But maybe let's mention that a little bit. This query doesn't actually do anything. Okay? This actually defines a query, right? And stores it in this thing, result, which is what's called, if I hover over here, this is an IEnumerable. Well, it gets a little tricky. You know, if we were using link to SQL, this would be an IQueryable, but it's really not an IQueryable. But it actually hasn't done anything yet, right? When I call toList, I am actually saying, hey, execute this statement, right? So there's this deferred, you know, if we have extra time at the end, and I really don't think we're going to, I can show some samples of how you can see how interesting it is the way deferred execution works. Because if you did have some method in here, let's say I was actually calling some method in here that did something else, well, that method wouldn't actually get fired until I called the to list. So it's kind of an interesting part of link, and it's really sort of, you can almost call it a little more advanced, and I want to move on. But
is there an execute method?
No, there's no execute method. You could call it to list, or you could, there's a bunch of ways that you could sort of force it.
But to
list is...
to do it on the order of customers.
I'm sorry?
Looks like you don't need to do this on the...
You don't need to do it at all. Let's just be clear.
On the order of customers.
Oh, yeah, the original example. Right. I'm thinking about that. Well, no, this would really be... if I wanted to iterate through that thing, I'd have to call toList on it, and then it would get fired. It's actually the same thing. If I don't call toList, it doesn't actually execute the query. A couple questions, and I'll...
Will it cache multiple calls to it so it doesn't do the same...
Will it cache multiple calls to it? Well, there are ways to actually cache. No, the call it ends up being in this thing, result is the call. It'll execute it the second time. I'm pretty certain on that. Yeah, okay. So here's the basic syntax. Now, we can do joins, right? Things that we would normally do in a database, we could do against our objects in memory. And... I'm showing this as an example of something that you could do in a lambda, an extension method or query operator, the way we showed you before. And it comes to personal preference. I actually think when you're doing joins, the syntax in this sort of, you know, the SQL-like syntax is a little easier to read than the query operator syntax. Okay? And this kind of looks like SQL, right? So if I wanted to join these two things, now remember, this isn't real database stuff. There's no foreign keys here. It just so happens that my artist has a string named band name, and my band has a string name. And it just so happens, because I wrote the data, that they match up really nicely. But there's no magic of foreign key constraint here. It's just, you know, but how cool is that? How cool is that, that there's no foreign key constraints, and I can do joins on this stuff, right? This is really powerful. And you can do a lot of cool stuff with in-memory data here. So... I think I'm kind of running out of, yeah, I can get this whole thing. So var result, I'm saving my result in a var. And so what does the syntax look like? I say, from artist in get artist, you know, in data service get artist. Now artist is, I guess that should be artists, which should really probably be plural. But no, from artist, right, because each one is a single, I guess. And I'm going to join it to band in data service get band on artist.bandname equals band.bandname, right? I mean, I think... You know, for those of us that have done querying before, that seems relatively familiar to us, right? What's really important to point out is this equals keyword, okay? I can promise you, I almost feel comfortable saying that every single person in this room will go home and, you know, if you're going to write one of these samples, and you get there and you start to write the double equals, because that's what we do. If you're a C-sharp developer, you know, this is what we do. But double equals does not work here. It has to be the keyword equals, all right? And so that's kind of important. Okay. And then I call my select at the end, and I say select artist, right? So now I could you know, I could run this, and it would basically be, what I'm doing here, this is an inner join, so I'm getting a list of all the artists that are actually in the bands, right? So by the way I wrote this, with this join, this is an inner join. Well, I don't have a sample for that. Yeah, you could do it, but I purposely don't have a sample for that because I find it's a little complicated. Maybe afterwards I could show you a sample on that, but you know, I kind of have to time box this, so I picked some samples for one, some samples for the other. I do want to point out, if you go to your favorite search engine like Bing, you could you can search for, I think, like 101 link samples is a pretty popular site that has all kinds of samples on link, of course. So let's take a look at an inner join with an anonymous object, okay? So, you know, before I was saying I showed an example of doing link with an anonymous object. In this case, I'm going to do link with an anonymous object. But in this case, I'm picking part of this object, one from one data source and one from the other. So I've got the artists and I've got the band. But in my new thing that I want to return, I'm going to pick some from column A and some from column B, right? So I'm taking the name of the artist, but I'm taking the band's year form, okay? And so I'm going to make a new anonymous object, name, with two properties, name and year form. So look how powerful these anonymous objects are. I can choose some from, you know, one part of my join and one from another. If you're wondering why this is grayed out, ReSharper is doing certain things for me. It's basically telling me that if you don't change the value, the name of the property, I could actually just say this. I could just say band year formed, and the property would be called year form, right? I think it's a little cleaner to do that, especially from a demo purpose. You know, you understand I'm creating a new property called year formed. That's all that is there. So in other words, so, you know, I've sort of chosen one from one column and one from another.
Did you forget to do ToList?
No, I didn't forget, because in this case, another way to, question was, did I forget to call ToList? ToList is one way to execute it. Another way to execute these queries is to iterate over it by calling the for each right here. But that's a good thing to point out. It's implicit that as I iterate over it, it executes it. And so again, you know, I have IntelliSense on these things as well. Even though the name comes from one object and the year formed, you know, comes from another object. It's all really cool stuff. I mean, can you see how like helpful this kind of stuff will be? Does it seem like the kind of like what I said at the beginning, like it makes your job, I think it makes my job easier. You know, this kind of code may take a little getting used to, you know, if you're new to it, but it's more readable. I mean, I personally think it's more readable. Now, there's another syntax you can use for joins as well. I showed this syntax here. We're using the equals keyword, the join and the equals keyword. You can also actually just say from artists in the data service get artists, from band and band names. I'm not calling join, and I just say where artist.bandname equals band.bandname. And in the where clause, right. And this will, you know, this will actually act the same way as an inner join. I'm not sure you can do, yeah, you couldn't do an outer join there. And the question, you know, if you're wondering, you know, why would there be two A's, I'll be honest, I do not know, but they both work. Do you have a question, sir? No, this session is not about link to SQL. I apologize if people were expecting to see link to SQL. This is introduction to link. Okay. Now, what's interesting here is what is link to SQL? Well, link to SQL actually, you know, introduces a lot more. But in essence, you're using all of the stuff I'm showing you against link objects, right? And link provides ways to take that data out of the database. But in doing so, if I wanted to write a link query against the database, don't take this literal, okay? Because I'm just kind of on the fly saying this. If this was linked to SQL, this might be a link data source of some sort, right? And I'm sort of paraphrasing here, but the link would look exactly the same, right? And that's what's great about link. In that first slide, when I explained, you know, what is link. Link is a syntax, right? And so this could be linked to SQL. I mean, you wouldn't even know if this was linked to SQL because it would look exactly the same. It's not. Now, linked to SQL is far more complex, and I certainly don't mean to take credit from linked to SQL. I love linked to SQL. I think it's really awesome. It's a whole other topic. And if you go to now, if you want to go home and you want to start looking at linked to SQL, I can promise you that it's going to make a whole lot more sense because you understand that foundation of a link. Okay? And I hope that helps you. And I'm sorry that we're not going to talk about linked to SQL in this talk. So I want to show an example of an outer join. And outer join is pretty wild. Because I got, what, like 5 more minutes, right? And you know what? That's actually cool because, you know, I can kind of start to wrap things up. The outer join syntax is pretty cool. Now, this is another one where I got to say, some of the link syntax, I think, is really smooth and really neat. And the outer join syntax is a little more complicated. Okay? But I want to first point out, how would we do an outer join beforehand? I was trying to think about this. Now, maybe there's a cleaner way to do it. But I was writing this, and I'm thinking, if I had an artist list and a bands list, and I wanted to find a list of artists that are not in a band. And in my data, I actually have, like, Elvis, you know. I guess technically he's in a band, but, you know, I'm just making him a solo act. So I was trying to think, well, you know, how would we do this the old way? So I could probably iterate through my artists collection here in my first outer loop, right? And then maybe have some sort of variable to see if there's a match, and then have an inner nested loop to loop through the bands and does the artist name match the band name? And if it's true, break out. You know, I mean, I don't need to explain this whole thing, but it's, you know, it isn't terrible, but it's a little, you know, I think verbose. Now, this may be something that is not something you're used to seeing, so it may look a little unusual. But if you think about it and you're used to SQL, I mean, doesn't that look a little more manageable? It kind of reads a little more like what it's doing, except that the outer join syntax is a little unusual. So, what's an outer join syntax and how does that work? What we're going to do is we're going to do the same join like we normally did. We're going to join on the band name with the equals keyword in the band names. But see this keyword into at the end. I'm going to take that join. I'm going to put it into another variable called bands. Right? And then I'm going to select from band in bands default if empty. Okay? Again, don't try to, you know, grok this thing on the first shot, because this just takes a little getting used to. I just want to show you the power of it and what you can do. This one, you know, takes a little getting used to. What does default if empty do? Default if empty says, hey, when I try to marry these things up, right, and I sort of wrote this, I actually added this last night because I thought it would make sense. Imagine I'm going through my list and I have Bono in one column, right, and I'm joining to the band U2, and I have Paul McCartney and the Beatles and John Lennon and the Beatles. I get to Elvis, and what's over there? Nothing. So it would drop out of my join, right? But instead I say default if empty, meaning, hey, put a placeholder there. Stick something in, and what is the default? Well, the default is null, which is fine, because we don't really, it has to be null, because it doesn't exist. There is nothing there. But what I end up with is sort of this, like, you know, I thought this would be a good visualization. You know, if you see two columns, and one of them has a null, but it's a placeholder. So how do I get this outer join to work? What I do is I say, at the end, I add a where clause, and I say, where band is null, or, you know, equals null. So now it's going to basically look through, you know, this list, if you will, and find the one with the null and return single item of Elvis. Right? A little complex maybe from an intro, but I want to point out that this is the kind of stuff you can do, the power of link, that you can do all this kind of cool stuff. All right? I'm not even going to, you know, show this because I want to wrap it up. But you can do grouping, okay? There's some really nice syntax for paging and stuff like that. And so, you know, these are just things to keep in mind as you're reading on, because I think I have like a minute left. And so with that, I'm going to find out if there's any questions. I want to remind everyone to complete the evaluation. I appreciate all the questions. We had a lot of questions throughout. If we have any more questions, we can take them now. And you also here have my email, and you can... and my blog, blog.ingenuitynow.net. These samples are there right now for you. And feel free to check them out. Please email me if you have any questions. Please fill out the evaluation. And thanks for coming.